Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's our Spring Fun Drive. It's also National Pet Day, a day dedicated to those pets who may not always get the companionship and attention they deserve. Radio Chatskill's Lane Tang speaks with the current director of the Sullivan County SPCA. It's also Library Week. Tracy Gates from the Liberty Library will be here to tell us about it. And did you know there's a 17-acre park at the former Lock 31 on the Delaware and Hudson Canal near Hawley? We'll find out more about it and how you could help clean it up. Plus, at Bethel Woods, play one-woman show Crazy Mama and the Youth Poetry Festival. Lots to get to, and your donations at WJFFradio.org. Or 845-482-4141. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. United Nations aid workers say they were shot at while waiting to cross through an Israeli checkpoint in central Gaza this week. UNICEF workers were trying to deliver fuel and medical supplies to the northern part of the enclave. NPR's Carrie Kahn reports that's where officials say famine conditions are already occurring.
UNICEF spokeswoman Tessa Ingram says she was riding in a three-vehicle caravan on Tuesday that was struck by gunfire coming from the direction of an Israeli checkpoint.
This is not something that should happen at any point to a UN convoy, but let alone one that's on a coordinated mission at a designated holding point where we were asked and authorized to wait.
She says none of the aid workers were injured, but workers continue to face dangers despite assurances of improved safety by Israel after seven World Central Kitchen employees were killed by an Israeli airstrike. Israel says they were mistakenly targeted. UNICEF says Israeli military have not responded to its inquiries. Military officials did not immediately respond to an NPR request. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The Israeli military says it will open a new land crossing into northern Gaza to allow more aid to flow to Palestinian civilians. Increased aid to Palestinians has been a key demand of the Biden administration. In the U.S., workers are still pulling bridge wreckage out of the water near the port of Baltimore. The Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed more than 2 weeks ago after a cargo ship crashed into a bridge support. Shipping traffic into the port has been sharply limited. Maryland Governor Wes Moore says workers have been able to open a couple of temporary shipping lanes.
We've now been able to open up two channels. So we now have a draft of up to 14 feet that can allow for small boats and barges, some elements of commercial traffic. There have been 59 commercial transits that have been made thus far. But we still know that we've got a long road to go to get us back to the 50-foot draft.
He spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. The Georgia Institute of Technology and computer hardware manufacturer NVIDIA are joining forces to provide students with access to an artificial intelligence supercomputer. From member station WABE, Marlon Hyde reports the school says it's the first-of-its-kind program in the nation.
Georgia Tech unveiled their new makerspace loaded with 3D printers and a sea of servers. Students can use the AI supercomputer to complete projects around topics like robotics and supply chain management. Arijit Raishalji is a professor at Georgia Tech and will lead the partnership.
The long-run plan is for us to be able to have not only an impact on all our Georgia Tech students, but on the entire community, including middle school students, high school students.
The first phase is only open to students, but officials hope that by next year, they can open up the space to more members of the community. For NPR News, I'm Marlon Hyde in Atlanta.
On Wall Street, stocks are mixed. The Dow is down 120 points. This is NPR. State media in Vietnam are reporting that a real estate tycoon has been sentenced to death. Michael Sullivan reports that's for her role in a bank fraud case worth billions of dollars.
The 67-year-old property developer Chuong My Lan was convicted of siphoning off billions of dollars from the Saigon Commercial Bank over the last decade. Investigators say she effectively controlled the bank through dozens of proxies. Dozens of others charged in the case were also convicted. Chuong My Lan is one of the wealthiest women in Vietnam and began her career in business selling cosmetics with her mother in a public market. The high-profile trial is part of the so-called Blazing Furnaces anti-corruption campaign led by the ruling Communist Party General Secretary Nguyen Phu Chung. For NPR News, I'm Michael Sullivan in Chiang Rai, Thailand.
Republican lawmakers in Arizona have blocked a Democratic effort to repeal a near-total ban on abortion in that state. GOP lawmakers in the state House used a procedural tactic, calling the chamber into recess before any vote could be taken. Arizona Democrats chanted shame. The Arizona Supreme Court ruled this week a Civil War-era abortion ban can take effect in the state. Parts of the South are cleaning up from yesterday's severe storms that raked parts of the region. The weather left a Mississippi woman dead. There's been more bad weather today. Organizers of the Masters Golf Tournament in Augusta, Georgia, say that bad weather has delayed the start of the tournament this morning. However, it will begin later this hour. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from C3 AI. C3 Generative AI works to enable rapid access to traceable, hallucination-free insights from enterprise systems using any LLM, helping turn the invisible into the obvious. C3.AI. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's our spring fund drive, and we're asking for your support at 845-482-4141 or at wjffradio.org. As part of our spring fund drive, we've been bringing in special guests and different voices to hear from. One of the voices you might be familiar with is Andy Carlson, who you hear on Radio Catskill during All Things Considered Thursdays. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Thanks for coming in early.
It's great.
Well, thank you. We also have a special guest. It's Diana.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
And you're here because you're one of our younger listeners. And what is your favorite show?
I really like to listen to Weekend Edition and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah. So what is it you like about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
I think it has like really great humor.
Uh-huh. And do you get some of the quiz questions when they ask them?
No, I think it's just funny to listen in general, like.
Yeah. And how did you start listening to public radio and Radio Catskill? We were having a little mic issue, so we're going to fix it for you there.
Well, I kind of just...
What you can't see, listener, is that the mic, every time we put it up to Diana's mouth, it falls down. It's like a comedy show. Now we're doing it like this. Do it that way, yeah. There you go.
So I just kind of found it. So I don't listen on like an actual radio or anything. I listen on my MP3 player.
Yeah.
So it just has like the, like it has different radio stations, and I just like kind of found whichever one did not have like 99% static, and I ended up finding Radio Catskill.
You know, Diana, that was going to be our slogan, without 99% static. So you know you're listening the way the cool kids listen online on an MP3 player, not the radio. It's still the same experience, but there's this thing about public radio that you really enjoy listening to. You're talking about Weekend Edition, and you're talking about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. How old are you?
I'm 10.
Wow. So 10-year-old starting out with public radio already. How does it compare to some of the other things that you listen to?
I don't really listen to podcasts or anything. I mainly just listen to music or don't listen to music or anything at all. But
do you listen to music from the same source from your MP3 player?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I just like plug my headphones in.
Because you can do it wherever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you just randomly came across Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and you're like, hey, what is this?
Yeah. And then I just kept listening to it because I thought it was like, I liked it. I think, I forget if it was like a Sunday, Saturday, which day of the week it was, but it was like a year or two ago.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's one of my favorite, like.
Do you play along with the quiz? Do you score yourself?
No, though I do count like at the final, like which of the on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, like the people who are on the
contestants.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not the contestants.
Oh, the panelists.
Yeah, the panelists. I like
the celebrities.
Yeah, like the last person I like say they like need 6 to win. I count with my fingers like, okay, like every time the bell rings, like, okay, that's 1, that's 2, that's 3, that's 4. Like, I think it's really...
It's a great show.
Yeah, it's a really great show.
Yeah. So we're it's our spring fund drive. We're asking for people to support us so that we can continue to bring shows like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me to you and to everybody else. We're asking folks to go online at wjffradio.org or 845-482-4141. Do you understand how like we work a little bit as public radio? We don't have commercials and it's free to everybody.
Yeah, I think that's like great because that helps people get news, like and information that they can use to help themselves.
Yeah, it's a public service, so it's public radio. So you're like one of our youngest listeners, and we're so happy that you're listening, and we think it's cool that you're listening on your MP3 player. And we also think it's cool that you're listening to such great programming that we have, too. Anything else you want to add, Diana?
I also know one of my friends has been on.
Who?
Max Foster.
Oh, I know Max.
He was one of my friends. He's in my class.
Uh-huh.
At the Homestead School.
Yeah.
So, now he's not in my class because I'm in a different, building of, like, the whole. Because there's, like, three buildings. There's early childhood, which is. And then there's the, lower L and right. upper L. And fourth grade through sixth grade would be upper L. So that's what I'm in,
okay.
fourth grade.
Okay. And so there's more than one young listener. There's two, at least, we know of. So you're spreading the public radio joy to your friends and family.
I'm counting just like you do during Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. That's two. I got
right.
two.
Diana, thank you so much for coming in. Thank you so much for listening as well, okay?
Yeah.
All right. We appreciate it. Again, support public radio for those new and younger folks that are listening to us, 845-482-4141, or go to WJFFradio.org. Before you go, today is National Pet Day. Do you have a pet?
I have three.
What do you have?
Three dogs.
Oh, what are their names?
Copper, Darwin, and Zebe.
And what kind of dogs are they?
They're all, like, mixed.
Yeah. Are they rescue dogs? Or
We just adopted them.
Yeah, yeah. So we're talking about National Pet Day and some of those pets who may not get all of the companionship and attention they deserve, those often overlooked dogs at animal shelters and that are adopted. So cool. We have one of our student journalists, Laying Tang, who spoke with John Attad, the current director of the Sullivan County SPCA, and Aurora Velasquez, who's the regional manager of the East Region at Best Friends Animal Society. They're talking about some of the challenges that they have for adopting pets, as well as trying to, you know, inspire folks to adopt those furry friends on National Pet Day.
That's one of the best things.
Here's Laying.
We move anywhere from 55 to 75 pets a month get adopted here. Cats, kittens, dogs, and puppies. But, you know, as soon as we have room, there's more to come in. So it's just a revolving door.
This is John Attard. He was a veterinary nurse for 33 years. Since last May, he has become the current director of Sullivan County SPCA Animal Shelter.
We're over 250 local animals for the past year. Plus, we take in animals from down south, Kentucky, that are in kill shelters, and they're rescued from them, and then the group brings them up to us. And so, you know, every day it's walking, playing with the dogs, the cats, socializing them, feeding them, cleaning up after them, and dealing with people coming in, surrendering their animals. You know, that seems to be a daily occurrence these days.
The shelter has more than 250 animals, but there are only 5 people on the team.
We have two full-time people, 3 part-time people, and then volunteers. But yeah, it's a lot of work. And myself, I work 6-7 days a week sometimes. You know, I'm here at 7 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I only leave till 5 o'clock at night. And then I do like help with the fundraising stuff. And, you know, I was the Easter Bunny last weekend for Christmas. I'm the Santa Claus and we take pictures and all. So yeah, it's busy.
John is not the only one who is experiencing this situation. Low adoption and low staff are 2 main problems of animal shelters in New York State after the pandemic.
We're just not seeing the volume of adopters that we need in order to adopt the volume of animals that we're seeing come into the shelters.
This is Aurora Velasquez. She is the regional manager of the Eastern Region at Best Friends Animal Society.
Lots of folks think that maybe there's a huge influx of animals coming into the shelters, but really the intake is about the same as pre-pandemic level. So it's not a huge increase, but the adopters, for whatever reason, just aren't there. And so animals are staying longer, shelters are filling up, and it's becoming really tough to sort of stay on top of that. And there have just been some studies put out by different organizations that younger generations, you know, your millennials, your Gen Zs, have been buying more dogs from breeders and pet stores and things like that. So in the animal welfare, animal shelter, rescue space, we have to figure out how to get the message out to them in a new and sort of refreshed way that really resonates.
And the animal shelters have not become as accessible as it was before the pandemic.
The pandemic really changed how shelters operated. Hours changed, staffing levels changed. And some shelters have had a little bit of a difficult time sort of getting their operations back to a place of where they were pre-pandemic, where they were, you know, super accessible to the public, convenient hours, easy processes. And so, you know, for some adopters, it's just harder to adopt at shelters.
So what causes the staff shortage in animal shelters?
There's no plainer way to say it than animal work is hard work. It's often very physical. You know, I always like to joke, if you work in an animal shelter or you volunteer with a rescue, you don't need a gym membership because you're constantly moving. So you're in the best shape of your life.
And the job is also emotionally challenging. John shares the story he knows about how the animals came to the shelter.
We get the people moved out next door and left the dog in the house. They heard it barking. You know, there was no water, food. They don't know what kind of dog it is. So we take an educated guess, you know, the best we can, but we still don't know the history of the dog. There is a lot of sadness in the shelter to go along with the happiness when you find homes for them. And while I've been doing it a long time, you know, since being in the vet field, so I guess I have a little better coping skills than the new people. But yeah, I mean, I cry still, and you know, new people cry more than I cry, but you know, it happens. Look, I'm getting teary-eyed now just talking about it. You know, it's what happens.
But this physically and emotionally demanding work doesn't pay well. According to U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, animal care and service workers' median pay is $14 per hour.
When you could get a job elsewhere that's a little bit easier on you as a human and make comparable wages, you know, it's kind of a hard sell. It can be tricky to keep people long-term because it is demanding in so many ways. I think partially that a lot of organizations are nonprofit, and so it's really reliant on donations. And when everybody's struggling financially, those donations can be hard to come by. Some organizations are municipal and funded through city government, county government. And, you know, those kinds of entities have so many priorities and so many places to allocate budget. Often we see animal organizations sort of at the bottom, unfortunately.
The reality is harsh. But people are persistently striving to improve the situation. Recently, about $3.8 million has been granted to 10 animal care groups in New York State. The funding will support construction, renovation, and expansion projects that will enhance animal care, health, and adoptions. In communities, animal shelters are helping each other to relieve the heavy burden of excessive homeless animals.
So we work with an organization in sort of the western part of the state, like Erie County. They're called 10 Lives Club. They're a cat-only shelter. So they have their main shelter, but then they have these sort of little pop-ups all over their area. And what they do is they reach out to other organizations who are maybe struggling. They have more cats than they can find homes for, and they'll transfer them to their organization to find them homes. So we're working with them now to set up a regular transfer of cats from 7 or 8 different organizations around the upstate New York region to just sort of keep that flow of cats going, because they have the adopters there. They don't have the cats. So going to other areas that have the cats, but not the adopters, and just sort of moving them over.
As an NGO focused on homeless animals and adoption, Best Friend Animal Society is trying to use AI and machine learning to analyze data and identify possible solutions for different communities.
What's happening over here is going to be different than what's happening over here. So it's not going to be a one size fits all, here's the solution. You know, it's really about what's happening in this particular community, this particular region, informed by the data. And so that'll be a really exciting thing, sort of using the AI and machine learning as it looks through this data and learns about what solutions exist.
As a local resident in Sullivan County, what can we do to help animal shelters?
Adoption is huge. It's wonderful, but maybe all you can do is 2 hours a week walking dogs or playing with cats. And that is tremendous. As we see animals staying longer in shelters, that ability to get out and go for a walk and burn off some energy is what's going to keep them emotionally sound and sort of stable until their family walks through the shelter doors. If you don't have time to contribute your time as a volunteer, donate. Every little bit helps. You know, donations don't have to be hundreds or thousands of dollars. $25, $50 can buy some toys or some food. That's really going to make a difference to those animals. So there is a way to help that everybody can access. And these are animals that are in our community already. And so like they're our animals too. So I always encourage folks to think about them as that and just, you know, whatever little thing you can do, do that. And collectively, we can all make a difference.
In Liberty, I'm Laying Town for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Laying, for that. And I'm here in the studio, Tim Bruno on Radio Chatskill with Mr. Andy Carlson. Andy, do you have a pet?
I do, yeah. I have Lily. She's a 13-year-old Jack Russell Terrier.
Aw, Lily.
She's a gorgeous little pup. She's a good girl. And she's a big part of my life.
Yeah, a big part of pets, a big part of everybody's life. National Pet Day, and encouraging folks to check out the shelters, the local shelter, SullivanSPCA.org, for information there. It's our spring fund drive. We're asking for support at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We are on our way. We're about 30% of the way toward our $55,000 goal, which
That's
is
amazing.
Great.
Thanks, everybody.
We're in a good spot. Yes, thanks to everybody. If you haven't given yet and you're listening, this is the good time to do that.
It's super easy to do.
Yeah. Can you tell folks how easy it is?
Yeah. We've got a who's that? Valerie out
front. Valerie's out there.
Valerie's
Mimi's
out
in
front.
There.
And Mimi.
Mary just came in.
Mary came in. So all you have to do is just give us a call. It's 845-482-4141 or go on the web to WJFFradio.org. And it's very easy. And you know, don't feel bad if you only have $20.
Yeah.
Every little bit helps. Maybe you have $20 a month and you want to be a sound supporter and you want to sign up to go ahead and sort of set it and forget it and just say, I want to give $100, but I don't have it right now. Just set it to come out every month and help WJFF radio throughout the year.
And if you're already a sound supporter, you could increase your monthly amount by $5 or $10 a
that's
month.
True.
That would be really helpful when you think about it. If it's $5 a month, that's like a $60 donation right there. That's great.
That's huge.
In addition to what you're already doing. Again, that sound supporter is what we call a sustaining membership, sustaining us throughout the year. We know that that's coming in, and we're trying to increase those sound supporters so we have more of a base to continue to bring you live local programming and to continue to reach young people like Diana, who came
Look
in to
that.
Talk to us. 10 years old, listening
How
to Wait,
amazing.
Wait, Don't Tell Me.
And she's got a great voice, too, I think.
Try to sign her up for a
That's
volunteer.
That's right, a weekend show or something.
Maybe Thursdays at 4.
That sounds good.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and here with Andy Carlson. You know, as part of what we do on Radio Chatskill is we check in throughout the region, and one of the places we check in every Thursday is in Wayne County. The Wayne County Historical Society operates a 17-acre park at former Lock 31 on the Delaware and Hudson Canal near Hawley, which includes a one-mile walking trail along the historic towpath. I wasn't aware. Do you aware of
I haven't
that?
Been over there myself.
Well,
that sounds great.
We're going to talk to someone about that, the Canal Park Committee Chair Tom Colbert with the Wayne County Historical Society, joining us now. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
And so, you know, this 17-acre park at former Lock 31 on the D&H Canal there, what tell us about that. What will folks find there?
Well, they'll find history. The existing canal is there, and there's water in the southern half of the canal. And there's also walking trails. There's a mile of the canal towpath, and then there's a loop also off of that that goes out along the river that's just really quite beautiful. It goes through several different little ecosystems. It's available for swimming, or you can launch your kayak there. You can fish, whatever, you know, the water edge draws you to.
Wow. Swimming and fishing and everything. That's awesome. You know, every spring, I know your group, Friends of Canal Park, spent a couple of days doing hands-on work of cleaning up and managing the landscape there. You've got a couple of events coming up on Saturday the 20th, the annual Tree Harvest Day. So tell us about that. What is a Tree Harvest Day all about?
That's a day that we clean up the trees that have fallen either on the towpath or into the canal. And we've had a lot of trees taken down because of the ash borer. And so there's a lot of litter from that that will get cleaned up that day. So we ask people to bring, if they're good at, if they can chainsaw, that's what we really need. And rakes and loppers, that kind of thing.
You know, there have been some turbulent weather events in the last couple of weeks, a couple of branches down on my house. Have you experienced more branches down this time of year?
A little bit, but not too badly. We've taken down about 40 trees, not just this year, but over the last couple of years because of the ash borer.
Yeah, you mentioned the ash borer. Is that causing more problems?
Well, we're about out of ashes.
Yeah.
Which is really sad because they're such a great tree.
Do you guys do any sort of replanting along the way as well to help, you know, reinvigorate the tree population along that park?
We're planting some trees, yeah, but a lot of these trees were along the towpath, and it's better that, you know, we really want to restore the sense of history, and the mules would not have been able to pull the barges with these trees in the way.
Right. Yeah. Another event, general cleanup day on May 4th. Volunteers are welcome. What can folks expect to do and contribute on the cleanup day on May 4th?
May 4th is it's a general cleanup. We need to pick up litter along Route 6. And there's other things like just general housekeeping in terms of the Daniels Farmhouse. And continue whatever didn't get done on April 20th.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, but that day we also have a potluck luncheon. And so we ask people to register before they come, so that we can kind of find out what they're going to bring as a dish and also how to plan for it, you know, setting out tables and chairs for enough people.
All right. Well, clean up day and lunch. That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, there. It's a very nice little day. You know, we work from about 9 in the morning till 1, and then we have lunch.
All right. And you mentioned, you know, the horses along the towpath and the history. Can you tell us a little bit more about the history of Lock 31 there at the Delaware and Hudson Canal?
Originally, there was just the house there. The Daniels Farmhouse was early homestead in the area. We think the house dates to about 1820, maybe a little earlier. And then later, the canal came through in 1825 through 28. It opened in 28. And so the first the family that lived there for two generations didn't really pay that much attention to the canal. They were more lumbermen, and I imagine some of their lumber ended up on the barges going by. But then later it was sold to Mr. Heinze, who was a grocer from Brooklyn, and he knew about location, and he turned it into a store and an inn and nightclub.
Nightclub?
Wow.
Yeah, it has a storied past.
What are some of the other things that are operated by the Wayne County Historical Society, some other museums and some other history you can tell us about?
Well, we don't own it, but we operate the Bethel School, it's just outside of Homesdale. And there's several programs there over the summer. There's the Old Stone Jail, which is quite a unique structure right near the courthouse. And that's open on Saturday once a month. And then the Farm Museum, which is open during the fair. Those are the principal ones. Of course, the main museum.
Right. And there's more information about the Historical Society, all of your programs, all the museums at waynehistorypa.com. Now, if folks want to volunteer on Tree Harvest Day on April 20th or for General Cleanup Day on May 4th, how can they get involved? Is it also there, waynehistorypa.com, or are there other ways to get in touch with you?
You can on the 20th, just show up.
Okay.
On the May 4th, please just call the museum and let us know you're coming. And it'd be helpful if you told us what you're going to bring as a contribution toward the potluck.
Right. Okay, cool. And before we go, any thoughts about reopening that nightclub?
Well, you know, we are finishing up the renovation on the house this year. There's the kitchen wing hasn't had any attention to it, but there was a bar in the signature room, and we hope to reconstruct that. We probably won't operate it as a bar, but it'll be there for the public to see.
Right.
And we hope to open up the house by the time of our festival in August.
All right, great. You know, all the possibilities open. Leave it there on the table. Who knows? All right, Tom Colbert, Canal Park Committee Chair for the Wayne County Historical Society, telling us about Tree Harvest Day on April 20th and May 4th, the General Cleanup Day there in near Hawley. Thank you so much, Tom. We appreciate you being here.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you. All right, Andy, we learned some more about this. Is what we do. We learn about things,
really,
too, on the show. I didn't
really
know about
did.
All the things over there.
And Tom was talking. I quickly logged on to the website. It's a really great website and some great information about the site. It historically really cool. And just to dovetail with our pet day, dogs are welcome as long as they're leashed and tagged. So it's a pretty inclusive area as well. So it sounds like a great place to visit. I think I'm about bringing my chainsaw over there and cutting up some wood.
Bring a chainsaw and a potluck dish.
Yeah.
WayneHistoryPA.com is where you can get more information. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back with more. Cultural reporter Valerie Manzi is here with a one-woman show that's going to be at Bethel Woods starting tomorrow through the weekend. A very interesting play. And also a very interesting director, the name of someone you might recognize. Mm. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjayville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org, and listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
The fight against disinformation is more complicated than ever. And in a record year for elections around the world, it's never been more important. I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. At NPR and this station, we report rigorously on the forces trying to disrupt democracy and provide your community with reliable information. This election year, stand with the facts. Donate to this station today.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
Or you can call 845-482-4141. And again, wjffradio.org online. We're 30% of the way toward our goal, and we could use your help today. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. I want to thank everybody that's donated, including Claire in High Falls, who donated online. Thank you so much for your support.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you, Claire.
That was the voices of two great volunteers. You just heard Andy Carlson there first, and then that's culture reporter Valerie Manzi. Hi, guys. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good on this dreary morning.
Springtime flowers.
Yeah, April showers. Spring, okay. May flowers.
There we go. Just remember the positive part of this. The positive part of this.
Yes, yes.
Now, Valerie Manzi, culture reporter Valerie Manzi, you've been bringing us all kinds of culture, and you've got a very interesting thing that's happening at Bethel Woods starting tomorrow. It's a one-woman show called Crazy Mama.
Crazy Mama, yes. Yes.
What's it about? Can you give us a little preview of what it is?
Well, it's based on a true story,
yeah,
of a mother that had very severe mental illness. Mm-hmm. However, it's got a comedic aspect and hopeful aspect to it, mm-hmm, as well. So it's not going to be a total downer. it's serious, but it is
enlightening,
presented in a way that offers hope and resolution.
We all need that. Now,
yes.
You spoke to the director of this play.
Who was?
I'm going to ask you to say the name, and we'll see if Andy recognizes this name. Do you remember? I'll say it. Anson Williams.
I was,
what?
Do you know
Anson
who that is?
Williams.
That's Potsy.
It's Potsy from Potsy.
Yes.
The director of this show.
3 o'clock, 4
yeah,
o'clock.
Yeah, exactly.
Rock. Yes. Yeah. And he was very delightful to speak with. And
that he is.
His wife wrote this memoir about her mother.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And it is now made into a play. And they're very excited about sharing it at up here in the Catskills with us.
Yes, at Bethel Woods, starting tomorrow, running through the weekends. Here is culture reporter Valerie Manzi's conversation with director of Crazy Mama, Anson Williams.
Good morning, Anson, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Well, thank you very much. Great to be on.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to hearing about the show that's coming up that you are the director of, Crazy Mama, A True Story of Love and Madness. It'll be at the Bethel Woods Center for Performing Arts, and it runs from April 12th through 14th. And for more information, you can go to Bethel Woods Center for the Arts and find out more information about the event and other events as well. So tell us about this play and how you became interested to direct it.
Well, like you said, it's a story of love and madness, but it's laced with humor and pathos. The play Crazy Mama shines a light on mental illness with a Southern-style directness and humor. And the way it all came about, my wife, Sharon Scott Williams, had written these short memoir stories, award-winning. She's a fabulous writer. I had the idea of a one-woman show. Lee Purcell, who you might remember, she was a movie star for years, brilliant, brilliant actress, Lee Purcell starring in it. But anyway, so Sharon sat down, and she wrote Crazy Mama as a play, as a one-woman show. And it's based on her life, a true story. I mean, she and her mother had a psychotic breakdown when she was 8 years old.
Wow.
And it took 40-some years to get her back. It's kind of a miracle. What the play does with humor, it opens the door to the family closet. All of us have something in there, and in many different areas of life. And you open that door, you face it, and that's when you start healing. And this story is Sharon's story from 8 years old, not only about her mother and what she went through, but what the family went through and how they got through it with love and hope. And again, opens the door for transparency, but through humor, entertainment, emotion. We've done readings, you know, workshop readings. I've never been to a play that had standing ovations at intermission. When a family comes in or a couple comes in, when they walk out, the major priorities of family and love and hope are there. You go out feeling better. You come out of the theater informed and emotional and educated and entertained. And we're very thankful to have Bethel Woods choosing us as their first play. They haven't done a play before. And again, it's honestly, I've directed in television so many different series. I started in theater, but it's been years. I've never read a script this brilliant. It's Pulitzer Prize material. And I feel so honored to be able to be the one to be able to direct it with Lee Purcell. We also have a musician who transitions to things like that. It's quite clever, quite original, quite entertaining. But anyway, whoever comes in to see Crazy Mama, is going to just have an amazing evening of love and hope and miracles.
Well, you know, the title alone, A Tale of Love and Madness, I was very moved by it.
Yes. The audience, even though it's Sharon's story, you know, about her mother's breakdown, it's amazing how it hits everyone differently. Everybody has a mom. There's always some kind of problem, whether it's dementia or cancer. There's always a challenge. This hits people on so many levels that that just opens our hearts and starts the healing. Again, it hits people in so many different ways, on so many different levels. Again, people walk out of the show feeling loved. They walk out of the show with hope. And they walk out of the show with much more understanding of mental illness and much more understanding of being givers, not takers, and much more understanding of the transparency needed in this country to start helping correct this catastrophic problem. But Sharon does it through humor, pathos, and the courage to open up and tell her story, which connects to everybody's story.
Yes, it does take courage. I also want to add that there is a closure of sorts.
The closure is, it took 40-some years. I'm not going to get into how. It's quite remarkable. But she gets her mother back 40-some years later.
It gives me chills just hearing it.
I'm directing the show, and I cannot get through it without bawling, crying, but it's cathartic. It's positive tears. It's relief.
Yes.
And it's such an encouraging show, you know, that there is hope. There is hope, you know, and there are miracles. There is a cure.
That's a wonderful description. And
please, everybody, come on out there. I will be there every show. You know, if there's any Happy Days fans out there, I'll be signing autographs, whatever. And I tell you, if I was going to say the theme of this show, love keeps hope alive.
Yes.
Love keeps hope alive. And I tell you, and we need the show now so badly. We need the show. You need a night of inspiration, of hope, and love. And priorities and healing. That's what this show does. I can't recommend it enough. The prices are so reasonable. And hopefully we'll go from Bethel Woods maybe to Off-Broadway. It's that important.
Thank you so much for taking the time to direct this and bring it up to our community up here in the Catskills.
We are so appreciated. One thing I'll say. During Happy Days, Gary Marshall was our mentor.
Yes.
And our teacher. He still has such an influence on us. He told us as young guys that you're going to be famous. You don't deserve it. You're going to have a light on you. He says, you're going to have a light on you. Take that light and shine it on people that are really doing something important. That's your job. Shine that light. Make this world a better place, you know. With your fame. So we've done that our entire lives. Happy, it's 50 years since that show went on the air.
Yes.
Ron, Henry, Donnie, and I, we've done that. We've abided by that. We put our light on as much as we could for people who really needed it to get things done. And this is one of those, I'm putting the light on Crazy Mama. It's that important. It serves a purpose. It really brings families together. It creates transparency, and it creates healing, love, and hope.
And that was a culture reporter, Valerie Manzi, speaking to Anson Williams. Yes, you heard that right. Anson Williams from the original cast of Happy Days.
Potsy.
Is directing the show Crazy Mama, which is going to be at Bethel Woods starting tomorrow through the weekend. There's more information about that at BethelWoodsCenter.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. I'm in the studio with Andy Carlson, volunteer, who you normally hear at 4 during All Things Considered, bringing you news and weather and information.
That's right. I'll be back later.
Coming in early to help us out with our spring fun drive, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We had pets. We had Potsy. We had some history. Now we've got the library, the Liberty Library. It's Library Week.
Hello, hello.
Tracy Gates is here. She's the community engagement coordinator for Liberty Library. To tell us about Library Week.
Yes.
Shining a light on all of our great libraries.
Not only is it National Pet Day, which I did not know about, probably because, sadly, I do not have a pet, at least yet.
Okay. This might encourage you.
It definitely is. But I'm here to encourage people to visit their library this week because we're kind of getting to the end of it, but we've got 3 more days of National Library Week, which I did a little research. It started in the 1950s when I guess research showed that Americans were spending less time on books and more on the listening to the radio, but also watching television and playing Demon musical radio. Instruments. I don't see what's wrong with that. But they did. That's when they the American Library Association and I guess the American Book Publishers formed a nonprofit, and they started National Library Week, and it's gone on ever since to encourage people to get to their library. So what the Liberty Public Library is doing, we've got a free raffle, and there's some really great prizes, but you have to actually get to our library to get your raffle
That's
ticket.
That's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
Go to the library.
I have to say, every time... Good. Come on in. I will see you later.
Okay. You know, you could listen to your radio on the way to the
yes,
library.
You can.
Yes, you can. Yes. Do not watch any TV or anything like that. but we've got some great prizes, both for children and adults. We've got gift cards. We've got a gift card to Floyd and Bobo's, and which is one of my favorite places to go to in the morning.
Floyd
for my
Bobo's. In Liberty.
In Liberty. And some for some stuffed animals and, of course, some books and and some DVDs of some award-winning movies. So please stop by. So
there's some things to encourage folks to come to the library.
Exactly.
You know, some incentives there. But you have a really healthy program schedule there at the Liberty Library.
Yes.
And are you seeing more and more people coming to the library?
Yes. Funny you should say that, Tim, because actually I have a writing program today that I now am conducting a memoir workshop. It actually is today at 2:00. I have a few more spots open. So you can go online to the libertypubliclibrary.org and look at the events calendar and sign up. I encourage people to do that now. But it's been so successful. And actually, we've got two people here that volunteer here at JFF that learned about it by me talking about it and have been showing up.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, great. And then, you know, we want folks to, of course, always attend anything that's going on at all of our libraries.
Yes.
We're, you know, I want to just like say, like, Library Week, hey, we hear you.
That's the third P, Pets, Posse, and Public Libraries.
Yes. Right. Yeah. But, you know, we want to make sure we're providing that forum for folks to go to our local libraries and support our local libraries. Your memoir writing class today at 2:00. What are some other things you have coming up that folks can participate in?
Yeah, two things that are kind of one-offs that I'm really excited about. Actually, you were already talking a little earlier about community cleanup. I think it was in Wayne County. Well, Liberty and the surrounding area also has a community cleanup day coming up on Saturday, April 20th. And I'm going to lead patrons that show up, and you can also sign up for it, but you can just show up, and I'm a lot of fun, so we'll have...
She is. We can attest to that.
Yeah, thank you. but it starts at 10, and in fact, I encourage people to get there at 10, because that's when we're going to actually go out into the community with our gloves and our bags. You know, we got to be safe about this, and clean up. I think it's the Rotary Club, if I'm not mistaken, anyway, is sponsoring this. And then I think there's a free lunch as well at the Liberty Elks Club. So anyway,
is the time of year for cleanup. We've got the litter sweep, litter pluck.
Exactly.
There's a volunteer cleanup day. And Holly, we were just talking about this litter cleanup. And I think it's great that we have all these things, because it shows that everybody cares about our area and wants it to look nice.
Yes.
Hopefully that we don't have to have too many litter cleanups if people pay attention to where to put their stuff.
Yeah.
But it's good that you guys are doing that too.
Yeah. And I just feel that, you know, there's so many to pick from, but if you're, you know, Saturday's a good day for it, and I will be there. So, and the other thing that I'm really excited about this month is that we have a poetry workshop every month that is called the Alchemy Poets Group or Poetry Writers, and they meet on Thursdays. But this month, Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m., they're going to have a reading, and their members, their writers are going to be reading from their most polished work. And I've heard some of their work, and it is really, really wonderful, and it's great to actually hear it being read aloud. So that's at 6 p.m. Thursday, April 18th. You don't have to sign up. You just can show up, and again, I will be there. And we'll also have some refreshments.
That's awesome. Speaking of poetry, there's a youth poetry festival. It's the third annual youth poetry festival on Sunday at Bethel Woods. I had a chance to speak to Sharon Kennedy Knoll, who is the Sullivan County Poet Laureate, to find out what folks can expect.
Ah, well, they can expect first and foremost to be entertained. This year we have 100 entries. That's a 45% increase than last year.
Wow.
And I know, it's wonderful. We have more school communities involved, and 9 now, homeschool, private, and public schools. And we produce a chapbook. And it's really not fair to call it a chapbook anymore because it's 80 pages long this year, and containing everyone's entries. Plus, we have wonderful artwork from the different schools. And this is also a doubling, 100% increase than what we had last year. And on top of that, the show takes place surrounded by the glorious artwork of the BOCES art show. So you can't lose. And finally, the last thing that's really wonderful is we've had 100% increase in musical participation, too. We have 11 performances, student performances scheduled throughout the day. So it's going to be a little mini Woodstock.
That's awesome.
It's going
to be long. Well, so, yeah. You know, with these great increases in participation, what do you attribute that to?
Perseverance, staying in touch with teachers, I think also getting the word out. I think just visiting the students, reiterating the importance of poetry, going to the schools, it takes a lot of legwork and reinforcement. There's no question. It's something that really needs a lot of stoking. Because actually, you know, not in every school is poetry even on the curriculum. The students aren't asked to write anything creatively as far as poetry. So I'm asking the teachers to add something additional to the curriculum sometimes. Sometimes it is in there.
And as Sullivan County Poet Laureate, that's what part of your role is to expose people to poetry. I would also think that, you know, by doing that, you're connecting with these students who may not see a creative outlet or even know that this is a creative outlet for them.
Sure. That's very true. You know, and part of the work of the Laureate is to get people who aren't aware that they have access to this and the festival and to their own creative strengths inside themselves to get them in touch with that and express themselves. So absolutely.
It's not just TikTok.
Right.
Where can folks get more information about the third annual Youth Poetry Festival?
I depend on folks like you because it's really the media. Supla maintains the Sullivan Sullivan Public Library Alliance maintains a web presence and a Facebook page. I have a page there devoted to what the laureate's doing, and that's listed there, the upcoming festival. It's also in the press for sure. But that's really, you know, how we get word out. Bethel Woods has it on their schedule. But yes.
Also, you're working still on your Catskill Poetry for Healing initiative. Mm-hmm. And you've got poetry plaques that are being unveiled at local libraries. Let's tell folks about, you know, what Catskill Poetry for Healing is and then what these poetry plaques are.
Sure. Well, this is the title of my project. It's I was funded with a grant, a fellowship grant from the Academy of American Poets for coming up with a community project that has some relevance that will have some impact, and full well knowing, encountering it very firsthand as Poet Laureate, the county has the highest death rate from drug use, and there's attached to that a mental illness crisis, and I wanted to see ways in which poetry could intervene effectively to help people who are struggling and who are in recovery. The project has 4 phases, outreach and then partnering with 5 institutions treating people who are in recovery. And those institutions are NAMI, Catholic Charities, the Veterans Administration, Dynamite in Fallsburg, Dynamite Youth Program, Youth Center, and New Hope Manor for Women in Barrieville. And so the second phase of this was 6 months of workshops where I would go and introduce the clients to poetry, give them writing exercises, various prompts, all kinds of different things we tried, and they would produce poems, they'd have homework, and then we'd share them and workshop them. So it was really a dovetailed kind of program, one, to emphasize the therapeutic value of creative writing and getting people to get what's inside of them on the page, out of themselves, so they can help shape that experience and not just be an actor endlessly reliving it in their heads. And the other part of that was to give people some of the discipline of craft. So it was kind of a little very brief mini MFA program, if you will, getting people aware of all the different literary tools poets have to get the word on the page. And so that was 6 months. And from that, people had the option. It certainly wasn't mandatory, but if they wanted to take one of their poems and continue to revise it, because writing is rewriting, they were given that. And I worked with them individually, and we continue to workshop their poems in workshop. And these poems were then sent to foundries in Oklahoma City and Pella, Iowa, and made up into plaques. And the really nice thing about this is the original project conceived of placing a plaque either in the green space or indoors, the 11 libraries that we have in the county. They are the nominal sponsors of the Poet Laureate position, so that made sense to me. But we had so much interest that I wound up with 14 plaques, and I've extended the reach to civic spaces. We have, in addition, the Delaware Valley Opera House, the North American Cultural Lab, and Sullivan Community College taking plaques as well. And these plaques they've already started being installed. The first one was March 23rd in Liberty Public Library. We just did three in Western Sullivan, and then we have, we have six scheduled in April altogether, three in May, and then four in June. So it's a nice kind of arc there this spring of these permanent installations. Some are indoors and some are out.
Is this an ongoing initiative? And if folks wanted to learn more or get involved, how would they do that?
Well, once again, it's out through the press. For every plaque installation, we do a press release, and I try to get the word out through the Facebook page and the website with Supla promoting it. It is very much open to the public, and they are very welcome to attend, because after all, again, the cornerstone of the project is getting people who are heretofore marginalized into the community, and this is one way to bring them in a rather permanent way. So we really appreciate attendance and involvement, and there's question and answer period, and there's a nice reception afterwards. So I really, really would like people to come out and support the project and some really superb poetry, really, really superb work.
And again, the third annual Youth Poetry Festival is Sunday at 2 at Bethel Woods. And Sharon Kennedy Knowles' Catskilled Poetry for Healing project is ongoing, as she mentioned. Sullivan County Poet Laureate Sharon Kennedy Knowles, thank you so much for being with us and for the work that you're doing to spread poetry to everybody out here.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. It really, truly is.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill, and such a great show. We're joined today by Andy Carlson and also Tracy Gates from the Liberty Public Library, talking about all of the great events in our community. Tracy, one more time, for Library Week, where can folks get information about what's going on, not only for this week, but just all around at the Liberty Public Library?
Sure. Yeah, it's just go to libertypubliclibrary.org, and right at the top there you'll see a little events, just click on that and it'll show you the whole calendar going forward. So hope you check it out, and really hope you come by the library this week.
Come by, say hi to Tracy, say hi to the folks at the library. Andy, any final parting thoughts? I would think that if you were listening to public radio for just 1 hour, this show kind of gives you a little taster, a tasting menu of what to expect.
And speaking of peas, this is the library, one of the pillars of community engagement.
Nicely done.
Very similar to what we do here. Yep. And the most important thing about it is that it's all predicated on on your donations, which you can give forth here at WJFFradio.org. You can also call us at 845-482-4141 and make a donation today.
Pledge now at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. It's our spring fund drive. We need your support to get us toward our goal. Thank you, Andy Carlson. We'll see you later today at 4. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
So you've never donated to the station before. That's okay. Today is a great day to make your first gift. Here's how.
Give now to Radio Catskill at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.